Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Om Shri Sai Ram. Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Karuna signing in live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Managing this live studio broadcast is audio engineer Brother Sunil. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. The time right now at the Prashanti Digital Studios is 9:40 a.m. It's a beautiful Thursday morning here in the ashram. Today is the 29th of August 2013, and you're tuned to Radio Sai's Asia Stream. The current temperature in Prashanti Nilayam is 25 degrees Celsius. The weather forecast calls for a mix of sun and cloud with midday highs of 34 degrees Celsius and just a hint of humidity in the air. The morning bhajan in the Cycle 1 Thal concluded 5 minutes ago, and I do hope you heard it on radiosai.org as we aired it live from the Cycle 1 Thal. As we always maintain here at Radio Sai, life is an ongoing celebration in Prashanti Nilayam. Yesterday, we celebrated Krishna Janmashtami, or the birth anniversary of the Krishna avatar today. And today, I beg your pardon, we are celebrating the 11th anniversary of Bhagwan's visit to the Radio Sai studio at the time of its inauguration. It was on August 29, 2002 that Bhagwan came personally to inaugurate this studio. Yesterday, we watched the video of the precious time he spent right here where we are airing this program from. It was sheer bliss to see how Bhagwan blessed all the equipment, the staff at that time, and the precious advice he imparted on how to go about running the show here at Radio Sai. Later on in the show, I will share with you a lot more detail of the informal talk Bhagwan gave here in the studio that day, exactly 11 years ago. I took notes yesterday as I watched the video, and I will gladly bring you up to speed with some of the tips he gave us. His divine advice is absolutely relevant to our work today and will be so forever. Only the divine can know all that ever can be known about every field of vocation. Truly, the executive producer, supreme director, the voice, the listener, the heart and soul of Radio Sai is and always will be Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Today, the entire team at Radio Sai, past and present, bows to our beloved Bhagwan. We offer our heartfelt gratitude at his lotus feet for giving us this opportunity to be associated with his very own radio station. And to mark the anniversary of that blessed day when the avatar set foot in the studio and inspected it thoroughly, dear listeners, I'm happy to inform you that our special guest for this 11th anniversary episode has already arrived. Apart from our omnipresent Lord Sai, audio engineer Sunil and I, we have the pleasure of having Professor G. Venkataraman with us in the studio this morning. And also joining us is a senior member of our staff, Suresh Rao, sir. And also, I have your questions and feedback received via email right here with me. We will insert them throughout the conversation as we go along. Every single day of his life, Professor Venkataraman works hard to take Bhagwan's message to listeners everywhere. He is deeply respected for his wisdom, and this was evident in his recent visits to the US and Canada and to Australia, New Zealand and the Philippines prior to that. Sai Ram, sir, and a very warm welcome to Morning Glory.
Sai Ram, and greetings to you and all your listeners.
Our listeners, of course. Sir, on November the 23rd, 2001, after much panic and drama, Baba pressed the button and inaugurated Radio Sai. And 9 months later, on August 29, 2002, he inaugurated the studio. Sir, this baby that Baba has entrusted you with, namely Radio Sai, is now a tween, so to speak. How has the journey been so far?
Tough.
To say the least.
But if he have achieved anything, it is entirely because of his blessings and grace. We have just taken a few short steps, and our real journey begins now. And that is going to be an even more difficult journey, but we are going to go through it.
Sir, you recently crisscrossed North America like a U.S. presidential candidate, if I may say so. You address volunteers.
I didn't kiss babies.
Short of that, you address many devotees and professionals and academicians and school children, and obviously you were not running for the White House. So what was the agenda of such a hectic trip covering many states in two countries?
That's a good question. It should be really directed to Dr. Narendranath Reddy, who arranged the tour. Basically, he said, you have not come to America for a long time. It's about time you come. Then I told him, you arrange the tour, I prepare the talks. So we shared the labor accordingly, and wherever Mary asked the lamb to go, the lamb went.
So and obedient.
There. That's about it. So, but it was a very useful tour for me. I learned a lot. I hope it was beneficial to the people who attended my talks. That, of course, they have to say, I can't see.
Mm-hmm. Now, you went to U.S., as Dr. Reddy pointed out rightly, after a very long gap. And you went at a time when the U.S. is still grappling with an ongoing economic crisis. Did you sense any change in the outlook of those societies towards life, its higher purpose, or in the level of spiritual curiosity and hunger amongst the people?
This is a tough question, because most of the time I was traveling. So I really had very little contact with people, except when I was addressing the audiences and before and after, and you know, the short social gatherings that take place around lunch table, dinner table, or breakfast time, and so on. And of course, I did have a lot of time to talk to my companions, who were kind enough to see me through various legs of the long journey, which is almost 12,000 miles, covering 20 cities. So I spent a lot of time talking to them. I could not say that I saw much of United States, because this trip was too fast. I saw airport lounges and houses, halls.
Traffic jams and highways?
No, traffic jams and all that were a blur to me. They threatened me with traffic jams everywhere, and I always ended up going 2 hours ahead to every airport and spending time there. Very few traffic jams that I really encountered. But two or three things that I did notice. One is that people have become very busy. And I don't think they are really busy about something serious. But life has, because of technology, made them busy. If you want, I can go into that. But right now, I said they have become too busy. And secondly, there is a lot more individualism. People are sort of highly individualistic. You see that the lifestyle, their personal lifestyle, the family's lifestyle, and so on. And lastly, there is a big unwritten fear about jobs. Mm. Nobody is sure about the jobs. They don't talk about it, but you can sense it. And these three undercurrents are there all the time, and so they affect the entire fabric of life, the life of the individual, the life of the family, the life of the community, and the life of the nation. And it shows up in various ways. So there is this strong current of insecurity of some sorts. Everybody is insecure, even the billionaire. I don't know what about, but that's the way it is. And remarkably, one thing I notice is that people seek security in the company of pets. That is one thing that I noticed. A lot of people have shattered families, but they are so attached to their dogs and cats, as the case may be. So
I guess it helps they don't talk back.
It's not merely that. They want to give love, they want to receive love. And there is no one who has the time to give or receive. So finally they end up with dogs. Mm-hmm. And there is an emptiness in the elderly people. In fact, many of my classmates about whom I got to know, they are all in depression. They were way ahead of me in earlier times, success stories. But now, they seem to be left with nothing, and they are in depression. And I was quite pain to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you spoke of these three factors, that life seems to be overly busy due to this excessive use of or dependence upon technology, and this growing individualism and this fear of job insecurity. What message of Baba did you bring to them under these circumstances?
Well, it is a long story, but the essential message I brought is, we go through life as if only the people whom we can see are going to be with us or support us and so on. They may even oppose us. But we don't realize that this birth is part of a long playout, and that there are other forces that control our appearance and disappearance. And once I forget or deliberately disown that power as the result of which I am here, then I have nothing to hold. It's like traveling in a fast train standing with nothing to hold. There is something to hold, but I don't notice it, or I ignore it, or I don't care for it. And we have painted ourselves into that corner, thinking that it's a secure corner, and when we discover insecurity, we are groping for that, but we are not able to find it. Though we can easily find it if we want to. Mm-hmm. That was the message I was trying to give them.
And I'll come to how it was received in a bit. Now, you do spend a considerable amount of your effort disseminating similar message over Radio Sai. When you went there, how did you find the level of awareness about Radio Sai amongst A, the Americans, and B, the Canadians?
I think that's not a fair question to split between America and Canada. That is politics. But let me say that different cities were different. That was very obvious. I mean, if you went to California, the audience was high-tech audience. And if you went to Boston, again it was a high-tech audience, because you have MIT, Harvard and all that. That shows up. And on the other hand, if you went to Toronto, it's an immigrant city with a very large immigrant population. It's in flux, that you see there in every aspect of life, from taxis to airports. So that character shows up. So if you go to the south, it's slightly different. So you get all shades, and therefore it is not possible to put it all in one bracket. And when you get lots of shades, different people come with different expectations and so on. Now, as regards the question of Radio Sai, there are two comments I would like to make, which is based not only on my recent trip, but also earlier trip to the three countries down under. Mm-hmm. At least two of them are down under, New Zealand, Australia and Philippines. And after that, after birthday, I made a very short trip to Hong Kong, China and Japan, mm-hmm. 15 days. Radio Sai is a brand name that is known as a name, but not many people know about what services it offers. And even fewer people know about how to access the services. And it is just astonishing how much of ignorance there is about Radio Sai. That I could not just find it easy to accept. And this sort of worries me a lot. And it's largely because people don't tell each other about Radio Sai and how to, make use of it. So, as a brand name, we are well known, but in terms of our services and what all we offer, there is not that much knowledge yet. Just to give an example, when I was in Wellington, New Zealand, mm-hmm. I had to literally use the laptop of the host and the hostess and show how they can see videos. They didn't know that it was possible. They didn't know that they could get radios. But on the other hand, many people do know. And one good thing is, in America, because of the podcast facility and the fact that many people have to drive long to work, they just download, put it in the car and go for one and a half hours. and in that select crowd Radio Sai is popular. Nevertheless, they don't tell each other. They tell everything they want to in Facebook and Twitter. But about Radio Sai, they want to keep it a secret, it looks like, and that hurts us. And I do hope people will share the good news about Radio Sai and its services also.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have a
I don't know if you become a gossipy channel, maybe it will become more popular. But I don't want to be guilty of that.
Well, we have to stick to what Swami told us to do, so I guess. But here is the feedback from somebody in the U.S., his brother Girish, who's a computer consultant by profession. And he says, I live in the U.S., and I have... he travels 4 days a week, and Radio Sai is his constant companion the whole week, especially for the 4 days he's on the road. And he listens to Ameristream for at least 12 hours a day on his phone. And he watches all the videos. Now, he says, although he was never a student of Baba, just listening to Radio Sai makes him feel like one. He's not been to Bal Vikas, he's not attended Sai University, but Radio Sai is really helping him in many ways. He does have a concern, sir, and he wants you to address it, please. He feels that the world outside is really contrasting to all the happiness that Radio Sai gives him. There is lawlessness, cruelty, crimes against women and so on, and lots of corruption. Now, he would like to see Radio Sai addressing these issues and helping people to understand them and bring discussions from law enforcement officials, politicians, or women's activists who are already Baba devotees. And he wants to see lots more dramas on these themes by Baba students. So what would you say to Brother Girish and others like him who are depending more and more on Radio Sai as a spiritual lifeline?
The answer is clear. In my mind, I am very clear that we should be moving to that gear. We should have moved long ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, to be honest and frank, we have failed in our program content. We have not looked forward. And secondly, it is time that we don't start talking about devotees. We have to treat the whole world as Swami's world and not devotee as an exclusive club.
Mm-hmm.
I know for a fact that there are people who do not bear the badge of a devotee but who are committed to his values far more than those who wear badge and couldn't care less about his values. This is a sad fact of life. So the first thing is we must enlarge the circle of outreach. Second thing is we must be inclusive and address people who do not know about Swami. Therefore, we have to change the wavelength considerably to become more universal, go rapidly away from just recalls of experiences which don't do anybody any good. I am sorry to say that. And thirdly, we have to relate explicitly, translate explicitly the specific teachings of Swami to specific issues in life at all levels, from the micro to macro. Now, that may look like a very fuzzy answer and a long answer. Let me just give you a very simple example.
Sure.
Yesterday I was listening to a BBC program. I do it almost every day. I was shocked to listen that in India, with a population of 1.2 billion, that's 1,200 million, only 35 million pay income tax. Now, that is a ridiculously small number. And with 35 million paying income tax, how can you solve the problems of this entire country? So I won't go into all the details, but the fact is there are at least 150 million more who are taxable but are not getting taxed. Now, everybody, if anybody tries to do anything, there is a lot of furor. And what happens is, even this 35 million start cheating on taxes. So there is a disconnect between the individual and this society. One of the things that Swami said was, if the God is in the individual, God is in every individual. Therefore, society is the macro aspect of God, individual is the micro aspect of God, and you have to relate to society.
Mm.
And the moment we are able to convince people about this, then one by one, we can start dealing with the problems of society. The problems of society includes cruelty to child, women, also corruption, everything. These are all macro problems, but they start at a small level.
Mm-hmm.
Just as cancer affects major organs, but starts at the genetic level, there is a connection. So we have to start explaining these connections, how Swami gave us prescriptions for dealing with all these things. One more thing and I'm through.
Hmm.
You see, we don't realize that problems are interconnected. Let me give you a simple example. I go with a heart problem, heaven forbid, let us say. The doctor will say, all right, do this. But then, once the heart is affected, because it's a central organ, the other organs will also feel the impact. So you have to take care of the whole body because of the connection. And this is particularly true when the patient has cancer and they do chemotherapy or radiation therapy, especially chemotherapy. No matter what chemotherapy you give, it may be for the pancreas or prostate or whatever, the hair starts falling. What has the hair got to do? It's here and there. That's the connection in the body. So just as you have to be very careful when you treat the body because of the interconnectivity, you have to be very careful when you deal with treating social problems. People don't do that. They just carve out this problem and treat it locally. And all the time, all the people are trying to deal with problems as individual problems. Fees are high, so deal with that. Climate change, deal with that. This is nonsense. You can't do this. And that was what Swami was trying to say. No, these are difficult messages. How do we, therefore, our question is, how do we take all these messages and package them in a form that can be understood by people outside at all levels, from children to old people. Children we have to target specially because they are coming into this world, they know nothing, they are very quickly brainwashed. How do we tell them without bossing or trying to talk down to them in a very convincing manner? This is your future, how are you going to take charge of it? So there is a lot of work, and unless we get into this work, we will not be really doing justice to the purpose for which this service was started. And one good news is, we have absolutely no competition in this area. There is nobody who is willing to do this, who has the competence to do it, who has the huge resource of wisdom available to do it. We have all that. And now there is no competition, and we have infinite wisdom with us in the form of discourse, manuscript, this, that. The buck stops with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, since you are at the mic and leading me, I'm going to say the buck stops with you.
Well, right now I'm sure Brother Girish is listening and he's very happy with your answer because you are concurring with what he has suggested. And sir, you spoke, you advocated this approach to treat the world as Swami's world and everybody alike. Have a more open-minded, all-inclusive approach. Don't divide the world into devotees and non-devotees. Now, during your visit to North America, as well as to New Zealand and Australia, you addressed a variety of audiences, including devotees and non-devotees. So do tell us a little bit about the kind of groups that you spoke to, and especially some of them were, I believe, technical people, such as the people at Caltech and in the Boston area.
It's an interesting question. Starting with my first tour in New Zealand, I spoke on three occasions to schools, and the first meeting was actually entirely to a Maori group of elders, because the school was being run for the Maori children.
Mm-hmm.
So I told them as elders what your responsibility is in relation to the school, which was run by the Sai organization. I won't go into the details. Then similarly in Wellington, I addressed a group of principals who were running different schools.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all very happy. And then they said, but these are difficult, how do you take it further? So he said, what you have to do is you have to come together and try to convince your community leaders, and then you are a member of parliament, and you must make the government realize investment on education is number one, because a child is tomorrow's future, not your minds, not your diaries, not your electricity. So they agreed with that. And I gave a similar talk in a school in New South Wales. Now, I took a similar message at a somewhat sophisticated level to the South China National University in Guangzhou. It was my first trip to China, probably last. I went to China just for that. And it is a huge university which is dedicated entirely to education. They seem to be sort of testing the waters with their toe on values. It's a sensitive question in China. And I stayed clear of religion, but I said values are needed in all society. Integrity, character are must. And they listened to me very carefully, especially because during the last 10 years, they have trained nearly 10,000 primary school teachers who work in four big provinces in the south. So now they want to extend it to the north. And coming to America, by the way, in New Zealand, I also addressed a group of doctors in a working hospital. They are not devotees of Swami. And I talked about compassionate health care, which they listened to with great interest and enthusiasm. And in America, there were a few groups. And Caltech was very special because there are actually two Caltechs. One is the regular university, which goes back 100 years. And the other is a very special lab called the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which came under Caltech management. And that laboratory is a few miles away from the regular university campus, and it's a high security area, and that is where all the unmanned space flights are controlled from. The missions to Mars in particular, the fly past Saturn, everything is from JPL Caltech. So that is a different kind of community. It's very specialized. Mm-hmm. Some of them also came to my talk. This is a sort of a very highly professionalized community, deep into science and technology. And I spoke on science and human values, why a blend is needed. There was a fairly big audience. And there were, of course, a few devotees who sneaked in, they always do. But most of the audience was non-devotees. Mm-hmm. However, they were mostly Orientals working in Caltech and JPL. There were hardly any white faces. They all seemed to feel that life is too busy and they have no need for all these things. That feeling is prevalent in many places. But those who attended did listen with interest. And in Denver, I addressed the interfaith group, and Denver is basically a white city. And more than half my audience was white and they were not devotees. And a lot of them came and talked to me like an airline pilot, a checkee and so on. They were concerned the same way you and I are. And they listened to Swami's message with great reverence, interest, and of course some kind of curiosity because it was new to them. And there was a similar meeting arranged in San Diego, which was attended by the mayor. That was sort of put together by Dr. Samuel Sandweiss, whom we all know. Mm. And he patterned it after my meeting in Melbourne, which was, I think, one of the best meetings I ever addressed. It was, that meeting was organized on UN Peace Day. UN Day.
In a beautiful church.
Wonderful church. And it had a very big mixed audience. And the lot of the UN people were there. That is, the people connected with the UN Association of Australia. So the message went there very well too. And the music on both occasions elevated the program and aroused the interest. And we hope at some point that the Melbourne thing is on the net.
Yes.
The San Diego thing is yet to be done. So there were these what you call odd events that allowed me to get in touch with outside audiences, and after much effort bordering on Herculean, I'm likely to get a chance to do the same thing in India. So, and I'm going to begin in Bombay. My
your own territory.
Yeah, this is where I was denied so far. But I said, no, I'm going to push my way in. Let me see how it works. That's my real test. in the beginning of October, I will have to go to Bombay, Pune and Goa. Let's see what happens to me.
Professor Venkatraman, when you spoke at all these places such as Denver or San Diego or Caltech, was there a Q&A session afterwards? Did you get to have some interaction with the audience?
Oh, yes. Q&A was mandatory as far as I was concerned. In many places, they had the cues written in 3x5 cards and screened it and all that. But in many places, I said, just stand up and ask. And I would say, in all this, one question that was asked by a 7-year-old Chinese boy in Toronto is a kind of question I've never been asked before anywhere, including in India or any other place. He asked a very difficult question that essentially related to karma and rebirth. I was just blown over. And then later on he came to me, I called him near, and then he whispered into my ears, I want to understand the inner meaning of Swami's discourses. I said, my God, I have to come all the way to Toronto to find a real seeker. That boy must be having good samskaras. So there is a lot of hidden surprise. So I have some hope. If a 7-year-old Chinese boy could say, I want to know the inner meaning of Swami's teachings, then there is hope for this world.
It's good to hear that hopeful strain from you, sir. Now, overall, did you sense an openness amongst your audience, especially the non-devotees, the professional technical groups, to Baba's message?
There was definitely among those groups a certain openness, because they all are soaked in this sea of materialism, and they have seen how corrosive it can be. They are able to understand. And that is what drew them to this kind of meeting in the first place. And the interesting point is, and I think this is a very important point as far as radio science is concerned, as I traveled, I saw lots and lots of cases of individuals being very helpful to other individuals. Too numerous to name. Plenty. Across racial divides, across age barriers and all that. So it is not as if it is all devil's country or anything like that. There is a lot of good. That's what Swami always used to say. So, I always told my audiences, if it consisted of devotees, and they all belong to the organization, if you ask me, our job is to be the pencil that connects the dots. There are so many dots, but they are all remaining dots. But if we connect them, we get a line, and it can be a very big line, in a thick line. So that's the way we should go. And I think that's the way Radio Sai should go, because we are not bound by territories or anything. The whole world is our audience. So really speaking, this is not a problem. This is a challenge and an opportunity that Swami is giving to us.
You spoke about the surprise of finding a 7-year-old seeker in Toronto. If I may take that further, how was your visit to the Satya Sai School of Canada?
It was a wonderful experience. And the first thing I saw was the school was very well equipped and furnished. And it reminded me of the primary school I visited in New Zealand, which was supposed to be meant for poor children. And I made the same remark I made in New Zealand. I said, our middle class and rich children don't get classrooms like this. And after I came back, and I was preparing for some article which I had to write, or a talk I had to give, by chance I came across some very disturbing photos, but very revealing ones too. These are photos of schools run under flyovers.
In India?
In India. I think in Bombay. They are just mind-boggling. The bridge is at the top and there is the wall, and on that is painted a black patch, rectangular patch, and children are sitting on the ground. And the classes are going, there are 3 or 4 classes going side by side. And that is not all. before the class, the children prepare the place, and there is a most stunning picture of a girl with a broom sweeping the place and boys rolling a carpet over it. And another picture where a teacher is explaining to a child, it's like tuition. And a fourth where there is no class, all the children have gone on, one girl is staring at the board and looking at her notebook. These underprivileged children struggling to get educated. And this is something I remember Madhuri Shah talking about very passionately in 1970s when India framed its first science and technology plan. And I remember getting up in BRC Hall and making a very strong and pungent comment. And in the year of the Lord, 2013, 40 years later, we are still having that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. So when you see that, you begin to ask, what is all this progress? Is it progress or delusional progress? Mm-hmm. That's where Swami's teachings become relevant.
Yeah, I hear your comment about the extremely upscale and beautiful infrastructure that the Satyasai School of Canada has, all with the grace of Bhagwan. But what about the children? What was your takeaway of interacting with those Canadian, young Canadians?
Well, my only chance was when they all sat down and I had a Q&A.
Mm-hmm.
And literally I conducted the Q&A, say, you ask, you haven't asked any questions. It was a lively and interesting session. And one of the takeaways I have is that unlike Indian children, they dare to ask questions, mm-hmm. which is part of their culture.
Absolutely.
We don't have that here. We ask what I would call impertinent questions, not questions relating to advancing one's knowledge and understanding. That is the difference.
Mm-hmm. Now, at this point in time, I'd like to read you another heartwarming message that we have received. And it has a request, and it comes from Mr. K. Venkat Raju and family from Hyderabad. And Mr. Raju works in a central government organization there. He writes, Sai Ram, sir, when Sai enters one's life, life is not the same. When Radio Sai enters one's life, home or the family is not the same again. This is our experience. First thing to exit was TV with cable connection. While that was in the immediate, then the ego started melting, love starts filling the heart, inner peace starts settling in, external world starts becoming tolerable to very present. Thank you, Swami, for giving us this great gift. And he goes on to say nice things about Radio Sai. And finally, our prayer to Swami and request to GV sir is to arrange for radio transmission on medium wave or short wave so that Radio Sai can be into houses, both in urban and rural areas, for those who cannot afford expensive broadband internet connection. So is this a viable option, sir?
I'm sad to say that viable options become unviable due to time and technology.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing is, broadcasting is controlled by Government of India, and they don't grant licenses for private radio stations, certainly not in shortwave and medium wave.
I see.
In recent years, they have allowed FM, private, but FM is a very short range, 50 kilometers at best,
mm-hmm.
and they get money out of it. Secondly, if you want to go to shortwave and medium wave, the amount of investment that we have to make, even if Government of India gives us a license, is huge. We have to radiate tens of kilowatt or hundreds of kilowatt of power by antenna.
Mm-hmm.
It is that power that is carrying. You don't get that kind of electricity, and we can't bear that kind of cost. If we had that kind of money, we can run two more hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody is going to give me that kind of money. And thirdly, supposing I do set up, please tell me in how many shops you can buy shortwave and medium wave receivers. You just can't buy. So let us accept the fact that just as gramophone records went and then came the cassette player, that has also gone. Before that, the spool tape recorder, that went, cassette player came and went. Then CDs, they are also gone. Now everybody does it in memory stick.
Mm.
And it has happened elsewhere too. You can't, there are no telegraph offices. You can't go and send a telegram. The last telegram has been sent.
Indian telegram is
so, there are, and now they are not publishing telephone directories anymore. So we have to accept the transition to the digital world, and hopefully broadband prices will come down. Now I have one practical solution for this gentleman. They can do what was done in America with what you call public libraries. In every village and small town in America, they used to have public libraries, which are fast disappearing, again due to economics, where you just can go and borrow books freely and read and return. Now, if the samitis in Hyderabad are prepared to record our programs and put it on CD, they can have a CD library. People can borrow and play it on CD players and return. So that is a way of listening to programs. You don't listen live, but most people don't listen live anyway because of time and other difficulties. So they listen to podcasts. So they can organize this, but that is up to them. It is a local initiative, which depends on the devotees and the samitis. That is one possibility.
Mm-hmm. So I hope Mr. K. Venkatrajan in Hyderabad is listening, and he's, I'm sure, very satisfied with your answer.
I'm not sure about that.
Well, I just want to add one thing. Sir, you were in Toronto. There's one of the Sai centers, the Scarborough Sai Center, has 200 CD titles of downloaded Radio Sai programs that are on top priority for all the, on demand for by all the devotees, especially a lot of talk series, SSC on air, and awareness.
Very good.
Series.
So what I have said has already been invented
done
in Toronto.
So many more people can actually take a cue from that and move on. And I just want you to also know that our listeners were very happy to know that you're coming on the show. And one such person is Mr. V. Baharin, I beg your pardon. Bharanidharan of New Delhi.
Bharanidharan.
Mr. V. Bharanidharan of New Delhi is originally from Tamil Nadu and currently on a government posting to Delhi, and he attends the Arkipuram Sector 5 Samiti there. And he makes a mention here that he'd like to hear from you something about the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization, quoting his personal example, how he was not able to attend one of the events at the Sai Centre, Seva event, because he had to go to Chennai on office work. And his Samiti convener actually called to inquire the reason for his absence and his well-being and reminded him of the next Sunday's Nagar Sankirtan, which is exclusively for his own salvation. So he would like to hear you speak about the value of the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization.
Oh God, this is like asking a tiger to talk about vegetarian food.
Why is it?
Because I am not connected with the Satya Sai Seva organization. Satya Sai Seva organization is an all India organization, and I am an ashramite, so I'm.
But aren't we all one? As
no, that I agree. But then that is very what you call cultural oneness. But the activities of the organization are very different from the kind of activities that go on here. They have a very special mandate and so on. About that, I can say a few things. The organization was started by Swami so that people who come here and listen to his discourses go out and become useful to society.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I have a two-point agenda there. Hopefully your seva will benefit whomsoever you are serving. But more important than that, you ought to do seva, seeing God in the person whom you serve. That is the reason why he called change poor feeding to Narayan seva, it is service to God. Now that aspect is hardly ever remembered. And seva is often throwing one's bait around. But that's a different story. That's how aberrations come into the picture. And Swami said, if you do seva in the spirit in which I want you to do, then you will think more of others and less of yourself, and this is the way your ego will come down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a two-in-one package. You serve society and simultaneously bring your ego down. Otherwise, you go like a yogi, withdraw into yourself and try to bring your ego down. That may do good to the yogi, but it doesn't do one bit of good to society. Swami said, in this age, there must be multiplication of benefit. So become an instrument of service to others and decrease your ego. And there are hundreds of service programs which the organization has planned and is executing all over the country. So that is one way of spreading the message. So how it does, what it does, I know only in what I call outline form because of my conversation with the senior office bearers, including Mr. V. Srinivasan and Mr. Nimish Pandya and Ramani, who now happen to be the vice presidents for the North and the South. I don't know the details, so I cannot really comment on that. But working for Swami is an activity that all are entitled to and all must engage in wherever they are. And as a part of that, we are here trying to do something in Radio Sai. And we are ready to do anything that would help the activities of the Sri Sathya Sai Seva organization if they are willing to make some suggestions. But there is one way in which the organization can help us.
Which is?
Which is to tell as many people as possible about Radio Sai.
Good one. Of course. That is for sure. Now, finally, I also have a feedback followed by a question from our Chennai-based listener, Lakshmi Narayanan, who is employed as senior project manager with the leading software firm in Chennai. The person says, Sai Raman, heartiest congratulations on the 11th anniversary of Bhagwan's visit to the studio and thanks us on behalf of their family. And my personal favorite goes on to say, personal favorite being all the interviews which I listen to during weekends. Video coverage is excellent. We feel Swami's omnipresence thanks mainly to Radio Sai. And he says, Dear Mr. Venkatraman Sai Ram, I have a question regarding today's education. Money is very important, and this question is not to find fault with anyone or hurt their feelings, but many well-educated parents continue to push their children, especially sons, to acquire high education only to get very high-paying jobs and accumulate a lot of wealth, because nowadays girls are looking to marry eligible bachelors who are very financially secure and well-settled. And this is putting acute amount of pressure on average boys. Everybody cannot be an overachiever, sending people into depression and causing a weird situation in our society. So why is this so? Why is character not given first priority but money is? And why are we churning these job seekers who only want to get the biggest, fattest salary possible? What has Swami said in this context?
Swami has given umpteen discourses. It is sad that the question is asked, what has Swami said? Every discourse on every convocation was on this issue. And apart from this, on innumerable occasions, Swami said, character is the most important ornament, not money, not wealth, and this and that. How many times he has said that health goes, it can come back. When wealth goes, it can come back. But when character goes, it can never come back. We don't realize that society changes because we change. We disown any contribution from our side. That is why Mahatma Gandhi said, before you try to change society, become the change you want to be a part of, which is something that Obama also said. I don't know whether he was quoting Gandhi, but he said that in his first presidential campaign. A young lady came and said, Senator, if you become a president, will you do this, this, this? And he said, Lady, I would like to do all these things, but you know, I can't do it alone. You have to be involved in it. Are you ready to be involved from now? Then I will have some momentum to push it. I have some push clout there, but I can't start everything myself. So this question is really boiling down to how seriously are devotees bothered about character as compared to money. Now, many years ago, I got a mail from a parent who is in the IT software industry in Bombay. And he wrote, I am a very strong devotee. My wife is also a strong devotee. We do this, that, sing, chant Rudram, blah, blah, blah. But our children are not like that. They are not interested in all these things. Why? What's going wrong? I couldn't reply in a straight manner to him, but I really wanted to ask him how much time he spends with his children. Their work is so demanding, they hardly spend any time. They hardly have any time even to sit and eat together. And once you create that kind of disconnect, other things will follow. You can't expect something to happen without, you know, making sure that prerequisites are carried out. I can't ask for a tree with fruits if I have not planted a seed and watered it. That's the kind of expectation that is growing these days. So, the samitis, what are they doing in this manner? I'm sure practically every member of the samiti in this area must be facing this problem. Do they talk about this? Samitis come, they sing bhajan, then they run away. They don't have study circles, they have no nothing. And they are told Narayan Savai, they come there, it's like Federal Express or UPS, it's a delivery service. Everybody blames time, pressure, work and all that. We can change it if we want to. But we don't, because we want to belong to that society. Now, once that current is there, it is very difficult to break it up. So one of the things that people must say is, I will make sure that my family will not attach value to money, number one. My family will attach value to character for my girl and her husband to be. And I tell the girl, listen, my dear, it doesn't matter if the man is not rich. If he has character, your life is guaranteed till the end. That is your greatest insurance. Are you ready for it? And if you prepare her for that, that God who cares for us will appreciate it and send her a good husband. I'm sure of that. Mm-hmm. So that is something we simply don't believe in. Dharma rakshati rakshita. Dharma is God. What is the meaning of dharma rakshita? Who protects dharma? Who am I to protect God? I am not anybody to protect God. But I adhere to dharma. I respect dharma. I serve dharma. Then that dharma will not keep quiet. That Swami has made very clear umpteen times. I remember once in Chennai, there was a military officer. Swami asked him to talk. He talked about corruption in the military and all that. Very difficult, Swami. I don't know what to do. Swami said, have you tried talking to your officer? Swami, this is military. You can't talk. He said, that is very good. You go and salam, ask him his permission. Sir, will you permit me to say some things? And then you tell him slowly. Swami, you can't do that. This went on for a while. Then finally says, what will happen if you talk to him and tell him there is corruption in the army? Swami, it will be called insubordination. I will be court-martialed. All right, you are court-martialed. What will happen? Swami, I will be dismissed. My pension will go away. My rank will be taken away. All right, all this has happened. What happens? Swami, what are you saying? I will be out in the street with my children and no work, no job, no house. All right, what happens? Said, Swami, what happens? I have lost everything. You have not lost everything. If you really believe in God and stand up for dharma, that God will not forsake you. You don't have that faith. That's why you are asking questions like this. So, Swami has been saying this a million times on so many occasions, in private, in public, in the interview room, here in the veranda. Everywhere he has said this. Nobody wants to pay attention to this. We put a filter and say, I want to hear only this, I don't want to hear this. Tell me nice, feel-good stories about experiences. No. The time to live Swami's message is now. Are we doing anything? And that's a question Radio Sai used to ask itself. I ask every night, and I am not very comfortable. We have to step up enormously.
That's a very powerful answer. Thank you so much. Now, sir,
really, I hope I blow out the fuse.
No, that was very practical gyan, everyday gyan. Now, the chorus of our listeners who want to see Radio Sai growing and they have growing expectations of us, yet we know that we are so crunched for time and resources and manpower over here. And as much as we love their offers to help us from all over the world, what can we do for a more meaningful engagement, more than, going beyond exchanging pleasant emails and so on? How can we engage with our loyal listeners to take Baba's message further to more people, including non-devotees?
Well, that's a good question. In fact, I have been engaged in very serious thinking for quite some time. And they are reaching a final stage of consolidation. And
who is they? They are reaching a final stage. Who is they? That
I'm talking to some of the senior trustees.
I see.
Because they are as much concerned about the dissemination of Swami's message as we are. You see, there has been what I call a step change, as we say in mathematics, from the day Swami physically left us.
Mm.
Till then, Swami was managing this portfolio. Messaging was his portfolio. All the others were doing other jobs. Now, the moment he physically withdrew, whose baby was messaging? And, well, part of messaging is done by individual through his actions or her actions and so on and so forth. But there was a need to, quote-unquote, package Swami's teachings as needed for different sectors of the public community. Teachers need it in one way, children need it in another way, businessmen need it in a third way, and so on. Because they say, all right, I don't care about all this. Tell me what Swami's teachings mean to me in my way of life. I'm an airline pilot. Does it have anything to do with me?
Mm-hmm.
Or Swami means something to me only when I go to the samiti.
Mm-hmm.
These kind of questions people ask. Do we have an answer? We don't. But there is an answer that Swami has given. We are not aware of that. So there is a whole new territory we have to enter. There is a whole new gear shift we have to make, and that calls for a total mobilization of thought, resources, plans, activities, and so on. I'm right in the thick of it at an age when my body doesn't really care to be involved in it, but it has to be done. And it will mean considerable enhancement of our technological resources, which automatically raise issues of resources, cash, people, talent, expertise, and so on. But at the end of it all, there is incredible amount of beautiful work which we can do. And in this, we can involve the people outside in a meaningful way, keeping in mind their time restrictions and their own professional demands on time. Just to give an example, I will mention some of the people I meant. In Australia and New Zealand, many people came to me with chits. I have worked in All India Radio, can you use me? I have got journalistic experience, I used to work for BBC, can you use me? And I am a graphic artist, can you use me? I took all these pieces of paper. But you know, it is just difficult to take and use them. Then in Boston, I addressed a group of youth. 30 people came. It was not part of the normal talk schedule. It was an impromptu thing. So I spoke to them for 3 hours. And they were very seriously interested. Then there was a very small group in New York, which I met. And then they referred me to one lady in Atlanta who works for CNN. Her name is Bibi. I met this Bibi and I exchanged mails with her. So I said, I'll follow up on this. And like that, I built up a set of what you call contacts.
Mm-hmm.
But now, before they all dissipate and fade away, I have to make a very clear statement about how people can help.
Yes.
So that I am going to do a musing in an article, which is under preparation in the midst of all this.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also need to change our programs. See, one of the things is there are very specific areas where we need to reach out to people. There was a lot of demand for what I would call something like an EHV channel. It won't be classroomish, but it will be material that is packed with values and that relates to life as it would be seen by a young person. Now, there again, I want to do it at different age groups. You can't put them all in one bracket. So I asked many people to give me some ideas about what are the perception of age people in those age groups. What are the age group partitions you would like? Say 6 to 9, 9 to 13, 13 to 17. Is it a good thing? And is it sort of flexible across your country? What are their perceptions? What do psychologists say? What do educationists say? What do parents say? If you know all those things, then we can do the packaging. Because otherwise, I will have a package and it will be totally useless to the consumer. There must be that kind of match. And the most important thing I have found is, you can attract anybody to what you say, provided you give them something very interesting which they do not know about. And you must put it in that language. Mm-hmm. And then when you do that, they come. And I'm not saying anything new. I went to Caltech. There was a school group that was being taken around. And I was sort of following that group in the sense that my host was a senior director. There are only so many places to see it, so whenever we went there, we'll see that group. We'll be either ahead of that group or we'll be behind that group. And there were people engaging this group. And the way they talked, and the way the children asked questions, it was very striking. I went similarly to the National Archives. Long lines, school children from different schools. Nice, beautiful Washington Day. They all come to see the Constitution. There is somebody explaining. I had gone there to know something about the archive, and one lady who is a very senior official with Gary Bell's help and senator's help, she took me with the help of special clearance down to the basement to show how paper is preserved and all that. But I was watching that. And I went to the Kennedy Center, and the whole thing, history, is all laid out in such an attractive manner. Everybody is coming and looking at all those things. So, if you present history or philosophy or nature or ecology or whatever it is in a manner that absorbs interest, you can win the game. So we have to really make spirituality relevant to all these things, and these things become relevant to people. People do not realize the remarkable wonders of the human body. If I talk to some of the doctors, often they will tell me this. I got two, three books. I want to convert that into an entire series. But then, unless I sit and work on that, it cannot be done. There are only so many things I can do. But now we are having a critical mass of people. Can we do it and get help from others? So outside world, I will try to divide them into groups. You look at ecology, you look at economics, you look at education, you look at healthcare as a service, you look at crime in society, you look at bullying, violence in society, all these different things. Give me inputs. Mm-hmm. And then we will see how to bring that and values together. And then we'll say, can you do this part of it for me? This is the program we want to produce. We want to do drama. We want to do skits. We want to do talks. We want to do blogs. Mm-hmm. We want to do cartoons. Can you do this? If you can work out some partnership, then I think we can do quite a lot. There is an enormous amount of work we can do. So I'm hoping that my tour would have helped me to get at least 20% of the people who came to see me. There were others who were very, very good, extremely good, but they are very busy. They are not available. I could see that. Not available. Bored on their faces. And especially on the West Coast, they said, nice meeting you, but we are not available. But on the other places, there are many people who are available.
Mm-hmm. I see. Now, hearing what you're saying about building bridges and remote teams, as we head towards our teens, can we expect a quantum jump, I guess, in the quality and nature of radio psych programs?
What do you mean by can you expect? You should say, I want a quantum jump and I am ready to jump.
All right. We all want a quantum jump, sir.
No. We have to do it, and we are getting organized to do it. Mm-hmm. But one thing we have to remember, And this is very critical for us, though, who claim to be doing Swami's work. Mm-hmm. We have to work together as a team. We can't just say, I will do only this, I will do only that. Those are natural tendencies that come, but we have to submerge it. And I say that very passionately because all the time I watch Swami, even when he was not physically well, he would put that aside and he will do it because he felt it was his duty to do it. I often heard him use the word duty many times. And I was always remembering that sloka in the Gita where Krishna says, Arjuna, I have no duty at all in these three worlds, yet I go around as though I am performing duty because people will imitate me. And if I appear to be doing duty, you will also do duty. Whereas Swami will always say, that is my duty, sir. I've heard him heard that. I used to drop dead when I was, Swami, what is all this? But he was really giving a message to me. And when duty comes, I can't take any shelter under any excuse. So we have to passionately feel it in his duty, the sense of duty. I know towards the end, there were so many days when he was physically not able to. But he would drag himself because people have come from so far, I have to give them ananda. Then he will come and he will have a lot of problems, physical problems. So there was no trace of selfishness. And having seen that, I just can't take any excuse. Said, come hell or high water, and I have to do it. And then I found that it helped me. This trip was very taxing. 12,000 miles, 20 cities, 7 weeks with no breaks, almost one city a day at times, sometimes two talks. And the number of talks, if you include the informal, it comes to 35 or 36. But I had gone prepared for most of them except the informal talks. And I did not feel what I call, you know, beaten up or broken down. I was tired here and there. But I did not lose my voice. I did not get sore throat. I did not get stomach upset. I did not have headache. I did not have toothache. I did not have cough, cold, nothing. How could an 80 plus do all that? I did. I kept on saying, Swami, this is your work. You take care of me. I'll do your work. For the contract, and he delivered. And I had full faith in two slokas he gives in the Gita. You do my work, I take care of you. I've seen it. So, I'm very confident we can do it. Because he wants it to be done. He said, sir, sitting right there.
Yes, in this very studio.
I was sitting here. In fact, one of the boys who was speaking, I shouldn't say this, but I am reminded of it. He said, you are trying all this. Who did all this? He was trying to tell him that I was behind all this. And he said, you did this. No. I am supposed to do it, but there is someone else who drove all this. So right from the beginning, he kept me for this because he offered me lots of jobs. After I retired as Vice Chancellor, there are 15 appointments he made and 15 he cancelled because he kept me for this. He never told me, I never realized it, but once I started working on this, I realized this is going to be my job till I breathe last. And so it has been a good job. What better job than this? But we have, our work starts now. And we can do terrific things. There is no other organization in India which can match us. We have a huge stockpile of materials. By the way, we have started translating his discourses one by one. And one of the outcomes of my visit to Chicago was I was able to establish contact with Professor Hemalatha. And after I came back, she has agreed to translate the 1996 discourses of Swami. And we sent her the first discourse delivered on 15th of June or something like that. And within a week, she has come back with translation. Amazing.
The former principal of the Anantapur College.
I know.
I cannot help but say that.
No, and she is much more than a principal.
Of
she
course.
Is a wonderful lady. And she and her commitment at this age.
And she's very tech-savvy, which is amazing for a person of her generation, very, very tech-savvy.
I don't know, but
she said
she will do it in 4 days, and she is making us run.
Excellent. I'm so happy to hear that Dr. Jehimratha is involved.
She's very much involved, and we are getting a few others also involved, because we want to now revisit all the discourses. See, our greatest asset is the discourses. We have about 1,100 discourses.
And I do remember I was watching the
video.
And
one more thing. We have now, many of the early discourses are in one language only, Kannada or Telugu.
Mm-hmm.
But all the other discourses, we are removing the translation and stitching it as one Telugu. Because for Telugu audiences, that will be good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having got the Telugu only, we have got transcripts. Now, having got the transcripts, we can do offline translation and get it validated by 2 or 3 people. And then, once I have a final, I have a reference, which Pandit Sagdi is a good translation of the original. Then from this I can go to other languages. So we are going to organize on a global scale, systematically. And this is the way raw material will be available. I will say basic source material, it's not raw material.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to quote Swami, you can quote him authentically and you can give references. And this is something which we don't have elsewhere. And we have lots of other material which I don't want to talk about. And they have now discovered a whole bunch of notebooks of Swami which have not seen the light of day.
Hmm.
So I am trying to get my hands on them and get them transcribed, translated and all that. So he has left us enormous. And as I read them, sort of the profundity keeps striking, coming back to me again and again. And when I relate it to the whole of the cosmos, it is just magnificent. It's just magnificent. I want to do so much work. I've got so much there, and there is so much I can do. I don't think I'll live that long. But I want to get it started so that others do it. We can really help a lot of people in a lot of places. Did I get carried away?
No, not at all. Actually, what you're saying is Swami had also exactly mentioned the same thing when he came to the studio 9 years ago on this very day. He said we have to be very accurate about the translation. He talked about his discourses, and he said when you translate those discourses, accuracy is very important, choice of words is important, and even though you use computers, be wary of computers, because he used the example of the word cook and book. If you've written the word book, and by mistake you type it as cook, the computer will say it's fine in spell check. So you have to meticulously go through everything word for word, and that's exactly what you're resonating. It's very nice.
By the way, Swami had that experience of word miscarriage. He told me once that one big VIP was coming. This was long ago. And it happened because I went to tell him something. Then he said, let me tell you a story. And he said he sent somebody to Penukonda, because that was where the telegraph office used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent a telegram to Bangalore, VIP coming, send 2 dozen figs. So 2 days later, the telegram from Bangalore, items sent by 2 trucks, 12 white, 12 black.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what is this? It turns out that instead of figs, their post office typed it as pigs.
Oh.
So they bought 12 white pigs and 12 black pigs, put it in 2 trucks and sent it over.
That's a good one.
Bhagwan himself told me this.
No wonder he was so particular about computers making typo errors. Spell check not being authentic.
Did you know this?
No, never. This is the first time I'm hearing it. Pigs, 12 pigs, white, 12 black instead of pigs. Wonderful. Now, so your final message for the listeners of Radio Sai on the 11th anniversary of Baba's visit to the studio.
Say that again?
Your final message for our listeners.
The message is that please pray so that we bring the message of Swami effectively in a manner that you like, and you would also build into your life, make a part of your life. So I want their prayer and good wishes so that we can take the message to them. That is my message to them.
Very beautiful. Thank you very much, sir. I'm sure our listeners are delighted to hear you on this live show, Morning Glory, and I hope you will come back again. It's very nice to get that update from you.
Okay, let us see if we can negotiate that contract.
Of course, it's a work in progress all the time. On behalf of all our listeners, thank you very, very much.
God bless everyone. Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram,
thank you. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. And we'll take a short break and we'll be right back. Sai's Glory, His Divine Story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch The Vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Sai Ram, dear listeners, you just heard Professor Venkatraman coming to you live from the Radio Sai studios on Morning Glory. We are back in the studio in Prashanthi Nilayam and the time is 10:54 a.m. Today is the 29th of August 2013. Exactly 11 years ago, Bhagwan inaugurated the studio from where this program is coming to you live at the moment. Yesterday, a few of us sat and watched the video of Baba's visit here on the early morning of August 29, 2002, and it was really sheer bliss to watch it. Swami sat about 2 feet from where I am seated right now. It was the same red chair that is still here in the studio to always remind us of His omnipresence. There was so much of love and tenderness in the way Bhagwan commented on everything around here, including the small steps leading to the studio. He liked them as they offer easy access. He looked over at the garden surrounding the building and he held on to my colleague, Brother Prakash Bharatkar's hand several times as he moved around all the workstations and through the studio. Baba checked the cameras, he asked questions, he checked out various audio systems, mixers, mics, computers. I sat and noted some of the pointers that he gave to our team as he sat down for a little informal talk. He said, knowledge should lead to skill. In turn, skill must translate into a sense of balance. And finally, to insights. So knowledge to skill, to balance, to insights. Bhagwan praised the immense hard work and thought and planning by Mr. Gopal Srinivasan, who had facilitated the setting up of the studio. He advised the team at that time, to value Mr. Srinivasan's effort and to proceed with our work in a spirit of unity, love, confidence and gratitude. What important life lessons. Work with unity, work with love, work with confidence and work with gratitude. Bhagwan asked us to follow high ideals. He said it very forcefully and disseminate his message with unflinching determination. All 5 senses must work in harmony and unison to take his message to the world, he said. He also advised us against any kind of wastage of time. He kept saying, time is God. He said, don't waste food. Food is God. Money is God. Energy is God. Don't waste anything. Now, Bhagwan also gave some really amazing editing tips. He warned us, as I was talking earlier to Professor Venkatraman, to be very careful of computers. And he did, you know, how Professor Venkatraman told us about the telegram asking for fix, which came back with pics. Swami also gave the example of the word cook. If you have a transcript which has the word cook and you meant to say book, your computer is not going to catch it. The spell check knows that cook is also a word. It can't make a judgment call. So be wary. Make sure you check all your work meticulously. Pay full attention to detail, and he said, complete every task as well and as thoroughly as possible. Leave no loose ends. What good advice. He reminded us that everything we say here on Radio Sai will be quoted outside. So we must work with utmost care, select good words to convey the message, and of course, our work quality must be excellent. One very sweet part was he was speaking to one of our colleagues, Brother Hari Nandakumar, who works out of the planetarium. He's a member of the Radio Sai team, but his office is in the planetarium. We are connected. Swami reminded us to be very careful while speaking to Hari. He said, be very careful of your pronunciation. Suddenly he said, you have to be clear and accurate. And let me give you an example. He said, the word planetarium, don't mispronounce it as planetorium. The correct way to pronounce the word planetarium is terium, not torium, not planetorium. It was utterly tender and sweet how he was interacting with the fortunate few. including Brother Sunil Kumar, who is our audio engineer today, and Brother C.G. Sai Prakash, Brother Prakash Bharatkar, and of course Brother Harinand Kumar. And Baba spoke to all the elders here, Professor Venkatraman, Mr. Rajan, Mr. Chakravarti, and of course Mr. Gopal Srinivasan and some others. And while he was speaking to Mr. Gopal Srinivasan, he even inquired about the studio lights. He was looking into the ceiling right above me, the lights. And then he asked about the smoke detectors in the ceiling and many other technical details. At one point, Swami barely waved his right hand, and almost from his finger, he handed a shining Rolex watch to Mr. Gopal Srinivasan. And he asked him, what is this? So he stood with folded hands and he said, Swami, this is a divine gift from Swami. He said, no, it's a Rolex. And then he took it back and he looked at the boys for time and he set the time on it before putting it around Mr. Srinivasan's wrist. The rest of us who are now a part of the team were not there 11 years ago. But just watching that video of the divine visit, it filled us with deep bliss. Every desk, every chair, a piece of equipment here is sanctified due to the visit that Bhagwan paid us. And how he went about touching his hands on everything. Let me say once again how grateful each one of us is for Bhagwan to have given us this chance to work in these hallowed premises and to be his instruments. With that, it's time to bid you Sai Ram. Till we meet next Thursday, please be well, keep seeking and stay inspired. And don't forget to smile and feel happy and positive always. Happiness is, after all, union with God. Up next, Seva, Love in Action with Brother Raghu. Sai Ram.
Yeah. Shiva.